Hey, I'm Zale, host of Preconceived, a podcast that challenges the preconceptions that shape how we view the world. Preconceived examines both our approach to major life choices, but also our perspectives on issues to which we may have been overly conditioned towards certain opinions. Each episode features a different topic, with experts, researchers, and luminaries in their respective fields. We think you will especially enjoy recent episodes on polyamory, regretting parenthood, dopamine nation, and myths of the beauty industry. Find Preconceived wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hi, baby.
Hello, Mash.
Ready for another day of podcasting.
It's always a little better after that.
It is.
Yeah, I'm ready.
For folks at home listening or watching, if you're watching on Patreon, patreon.com/termion, thanks for your support. We are here at the Sick Boy headquarters, and there is construction going on, so you might hear some bangs and some zings and some whirs.
You were saying you feel fried. Do you think that has anything to do with it?
No, because I haven't been here very much over the last few days.
Because of that?
Yeah. We canceled a couple interviews. Okay. And
Because it reminds me of the living experience we had when we first moved to Halifax, and we lived on the third floor of like a high rise building, but they were doing jackhammering in the parking garage underneath us, and it sounded like it was in our apartment.
It was so stressful that our cats.
My cat lost his mind.
Licked their bellies.
Oh, that's right.
Developed this like neuroses where they started to lick their bellies. Constantly.
That's right.
And they licked it so much that they licked all the fur off their bellies. We had to vacate that place bad. Actually, it was so perfect because we got Bigby. Mm-hmm. May he rest in peace. Had a dream about him the other night. We got Bigby, and we were living in an apartment that didn't allow dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to my doctor.
That's right.
Went to like the CF clinic.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yo, listen, there's smoking units in my building and I think it's fucking with my lungs. And the physician was like,
you can't live there.
You can't live there. I'll sign a doctor's note. And we brought that note to the
to the office of the building, and they were like, I don't know. And I was like, no, I think you do. I think you got to let us out of our lease early.
And so they did. And we got out of there. The cats didn't go so crazy. The cats didn't get any more crazy, but I think that fucked them up pretty badly.
I don't know. Remember then Vonnegut had that weird stage where it was like he was a feral cat, like he had never eaten before?
Yeah.
So, because then we moved from Halifax to Salt Spring Island.
Yeah.
And we had that whole period of time when he was like, the minute you take out food, he was like on the counter, like over your shoulder, like eating like between your fingers. Like he's so desperate.
Yeah. That noise.
Well, you find that annoying?
Jesus Christ.
That's the kind of.
Oh, my God.
That.
Fuck's sakes. I mean, you just got to talk over it. There's no, this is the fucking thing. There is no stopping it.
Can our listeners hear that?
Oh, fuck yeah. Are you kidding me? Hell yeah, they can.
Sorry, friends. We won't keep you too long today with this.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
This is the thing. This is the kind of thing that makes a little bit of itchiness on my eczema feel like it's
a lot of itchiness.
Like my arms and legs are on fire.
Speaking of noises that kind of like, that kind of throw a wrench into your thinking process, where like, God damn it. Thank you. Which funny, they can hear me.
Yeah, of course they can.
Speaking of noises, do you ever notice, I've noticed this a couple of times as of late. I've noticed this plenty of times in my life, but it's happened a couple of times as of late. And every time it does, I make this like quick mental note where I go, that's really interesting that happens. Are you ever like having sex and the motion of the sex is causing some sort of creak or like noise?
Uh-huh.
Typically it's like on a bed and it's like the headboard going, or like, you know, something of that sort.
Yeah.
Where it's like, it wasn't happening. It wasn't present, but then there's a position that changed and now it's happening.
And now it's more like a.
Yeah. So now it wasn't present and now it is present. And then when it's present, it's like, it almost pulls you out of the experience because you're like, well, I don't know what it is. I have a hard time continuing to have that noise going.
Right.
Were we talking about misophonia on this show?
Yeah.
Like
last
week?
Yeah.
Is that my misophonia, or is it kind of a collective experience where when that happens, you kind of go, I don't want that here. I don't want that in this space.
I don't know, because I know our brains pick up on like patterns.
Yeah.
So I don't, but usually I find patterns to be quite hypnotic as opposed to distracting.
Sure.
Whereas like, say you have a dripping tap and it's not like a regular drip. Mm. It's like drip, drip, drip.
Yeah.
Drip.
Yeah. That's fucking get that shit out of here.
Yeah, exactly.
But this is what I mean in that it was the creaking that was not present the entire time. So when it interrupts the flow of the sexual pleasure.
Yeah.
It must stop.
Right.
Or else
you gotta change,
get fixated on.
Your vagina dries up. You lose your heart.
It shrivels up.
That makes sense to me. That definitely makes sense to me. But I mean,
Have you ever noticed it? Have you ever like been in a, you've never really noticed that?
I've noticed it. No, not in sound. I've felt it in sensation where I'm like, this sensation has to stop because I'm like.
Sure. Sure, sure, sure.
Like it, the repetitiveness of this movement
this thing,
is not
I'm
working
tired,
for
it's
me.
It's tiresome. Yeah, no. But I'm specifically like, I get
it's
that.
A sound.
It's the sound thing. And I've been thinking about it a lot because I've got this janky bed.
Yeah, you
and
do.
And it's been, it's fine. It's comfy. It's a comfy bed, but it's slightly janky. And so, and on concrete floors, I'm noticing how much the bed shifts.
Yeah. Just put your mattress on the floor, old school style.
No, I'm a 33-year-old man now.
Yeah, that sounds annoying. But is that so? That's happening on the slatted bed.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
I think
hear
it's
that.
The headboard. Well, I mean, it. I can stop it.
Yeah,
I do stop it.
How?
Stuff
pair underwear.
No,
back
no, no,
there?
No. Like while I'm making love, I will. And I hear that noise, I will then grab the headboard and use that as like leverage. It kind of works.
I mean,
in
that's
my
probably
favor.
How it started. Just you,
me,
wiggling
just fucking rank. Yeah, right. Yeah, no, maybe.
I haven't noticed that. Oh, man. Sex. I could have some of that. You know, actually, let me. It's been a little bit because of my skin. Oh, and I've just been like, don't fucking touch me. Like, my skin feels like sandpaper. And so I haven't had that kind of sex in a bit. Mm-hmm. But I was just listening to a podcast this morning. So I learned about this new podcast because they liked one of our posts about human connection through touch.
Cool.
They're called The Pleasure Mechanics. And they've been around.
Neat.
I think it's a she. She's been around since like 2006 doing this. So this is a long time.
That is a long time podcasting.
And they commented on posts like, great to see this. Love, like, intentional touch, you know, encouraging that, et cetera, et cetera. And then messaged us to say, check out our like couples massage workshops that we do, which is very complimentary to what we did a couple weeks ago. And so I started listening to the podcast and I've only a couple of episodes in, but there's some really good stuff in there. And the one I was listening to this morning, me just burped into the fucking microphone.
I love that noise. That like it wasn't even a burp. It's just like that chest. Throat thing that goes. Sounds like you run your fucking nail like up a washing board.
It's just air escaping from my body. The most recent. Okay, so yeah, sorry. The name of the podcast is called "Speaking of Sex with the Pleasure Mechanics."
Okay. Oh, yeah, okay. The pleasure mechanics, like mechanics working on a car, not mechanics as in the mechanics like the mechanics of a video game or something.
Right, yeah, yeah. So this episode was released March 23rd of this year, and it's an interview with Emily Nagoski. Emily wrote Come As You Are, which is like one of those, and I'm saying it's a must read. I have not read it. It's one of those must read books on like on any sort of path of like sort of upgrading your sexual education, being like,
sure,
you know, and it was an interesting conversation. But one of the things that stuck out to me, and it's been on my mind for a while previous to this, is this concept of desire and like where desire comes from. Because most of us have been in new relationships where it's like super lusty. And like we want all the sex and we want it all the time. But then when that runs out, I'm curious, like, where does desire come from? Like the libido, like sex drive. And one of the things she said in it is that sex drive isn't a drive, like hunger and survival is a drive, but it's like a human, experience that we like want. So it's not necessary for survival, but we want to do it. So she was saying about desire, the kind that we're familiar with in new relationships, and that a lot of us have been sort of raised to think is like the good way or like the best way to experience desire, being spontaneous desire. Like, ugh, like I want you. Like I'm turned on.
Yes.
And it's like, by the sight of the thought of
switched.
You. Exactly.
Yeah.
But then she introduces this other kind of desire called responsive desire. And responsive desire isn't like, is being turned on because or when you're experiencing pleasure. So for example, like
you're receiving a massage.
Exactly.
And there's no sex. It's not a sexual thing. It's just like, babe, can you get this knot out of my back? And they're like, yeah, sure. Lay on the bed and I'll do that. And then you're doing that. And then that's like, that starts to stimulate like a, man, this feels good. And you know, what would feel even better is if we both did this without our clothes on and inside each other.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, totally. Well, I'm so glad you bring up that example because that's the perfect one. And I've said, you know, in my own struggle with like libido, I'm trying to say like as much. We get called out one of our iTunes reviews for
saying like.
Yeah, I say like too much.
Oh, shut the fuck up. Who the fuck is reviewing that shit on iTunes?
They want a date on us anyway.
But yeah, sure. Yeah.
So if you're hearing this and you haven't left us a review, go on over to Apple iTunes and leave us a review.
Scrub that like one.
drive it down into the cave.
You say like too much.
Well,
you know what?
Actually,
that, you know what? No, no, no. I got a problem with that. I got a problem with that. Cause you know what?
You do.
Don't fucking tell anyone how they should fucking talk. Mm. Don't fucking tell anyone they swear too much. Don't fucking tell anyone they say like too much. Just let people be. Let people express with the words that feel good to them. Because it's like, is this your fucking fight? Is this the thing you want to fight for?
Is this the hill you want to die on?
Shut up. You fucking Muppet. Whatever.
No, they wanted to hate on
us. What
a
ding dong.
Ding dong. What a fuddy duddy.
Fucking fuddy duddy, if you ask me.
So I don't know where I was at, but basically, yes. So with desire, with my own desire, with my own libido, with my own sex drive, and I'm trying to, like, how do I get more spontaneously turned on?
Right.
You know?
In this podcast, do they talk about examples of other, because like the massage one totally makes sense to me.
Right? And it's the thing that I ask for the most.
Another thing that makes sense to me is like taking a nap. Because taking a nap in the middle of the day, it's just like, all right, who are we fucking kidding?
Yeah.
Are we going to take a nap? Or we're going to lay in the bed and
pull
on the couch
eventually.
And spoon.
I'm going to rub my butt up against your pelvis a little bit.
This is just immediately going to like turn somebody on.
Yeah.
But
making out.
Yeah, totally making out. But like, are there other ones that, because like making out and like spooning, are there some that just like maybe aren't as obvious to me?
Well, they don't talk about it in the podcast, but I was thinking specifically about some of the people that we know and love that are really, that I look up to in terms of their ability to find pleasure in the everyday. So one of them is my sister, Tara.
Right.
You know, like she'll just like,
she'll stare at a tulip for five minutes over a matcha fucking latte.
but that kind of appreciation and like noticing of things. Mm-hmm. But I think too that it would be beneficial to experience those moments with a partner. So I was thinking, enjoying having a sensual experience of food together where you're like, where you're really intentionally having it, talking about it.
I mean, yeah, you say that and it reminds me of the experience of psychedelics. You know, it's like that's sort of the mindset that I always tend to fall into when I'm high, like when I'm exploring my brain on psychedelics. I'm like, you know, it's a fucking classic old thing where you're like, oh my God, I've never noticed all the different shades of green on this plant. Like, this is fucking crazy. And then, you know, you kind of go into that way deeper sensation of deriving pleasure from the constant stimuli that you're always experiencing every day, but take for granted or just don't really notice.
That reminds me of a time that we did MDMA together in Toronto and went to the botanical gardens.
Oh my God.
And I was like, I'm going to hug this cactus. Like, I just wanted all the sensations. Yeah. Poor Toronto. I'm sending our love to our Toronto listeners in Ontario and Quebec as well. And
I read the funniest tweet the other day that was, I can't believe this is the Ford brother who doesn't smoke crack.
Oh, that's not. I mean, that's funny.
That's funny. That's a funny tweet.
Yeah.
It is. It's just like, and it's so easy to forget being in this little bubble of ours, you know?
Yeah. Just listening to the news, it feels like it's a different planet.
It's so. There was also another really funny thing that Jeff, our manager, texted the group, me and the guys this morning. And it was a screenshot of someone's story of the front page of the Chronicle Herald, which is like a newspaper here in Nova Scotia. And the caption of the person's story said something like to the effect of like, when they tell you the news in Nova Scotia hits a bit different. And the headline, like the front page of the paper today was like, woman who can't burp finds cure. And I was like, man, riveting.
Yeah.
riveting that is like, Dartmouth woman finds cure for not being able to burp. And there's just people, just the highest lining amounts of ICU patients ever in Ontario right now.
Fuck. We love you.
We live in a simulation.
Take care of yourselves out there.
I think we are going to try to get that lady who found the cure to not being able to burp, though, on Sick Boys.
So. Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, it's a perfect fit.
It's great.
I wonder if it will affect her.
She went to Chicago for it. This is
I'm trying to imagine how being afflicted with the inability to burp would
That would fucking suck. Think about when you have a burp that's trapped and you can't get it out. Do you know that? Have you ever had that sensation?
Well, not. I can't. I've had bad gas that doesn't know how to escape my body.
I think it's kind of like that, but like in your esophagus, dude.
Okay. Well, I suppose that's uncomfortable. It probably provides you with a bit of chest.
You definitely
discomfort.
Would get this. Think about the feeling of going, I have to fucking sneeze right now, but I can't sneeze.
No, that's annoying.
It's super annoying, right? Now, think about that. Here's the thing. I never read the fucking article. I was just a little headline whore with it. But so I have no idea. I'm just guessing. I fucking hope there's at least a story here. If that's the story on the front page, it better be torturous.
Man, oh man, oh man.
If that lady's listening right now.
Or as my grandmother would say, boyzo, boyzo, boyzo.
Boyzo, boyzo.
Hey, can we talk about Bill?
I guess so, yeah.
So we lost a member of our extended family yesterday. Lovely old gentleman named Bill. Yeah. He was a really, really sweet man, and he was probably in his, mid-80s?
Yeah, I think so.
And he came into our lives almost 4 years ago when he met your nan on a dating site?
No, they were... They were... So my nan, my pop died... Oh, fuck. I don't know, 9 years ago now? A while ago. And my nan was all by her lonesome. And so I think my mom at the time was like encouraging my nan to get out and be social. And she was going to this seniors, elderlies.
Games night?
Games night support. sort of social
card party
night. And that's where I believe she met Bill, who also my name was a widow and Bill was a
widower.
He had lost.
It's still a widow.
Is it a widow?
Yeah.
I thought a widow is
a widower. Maybe. Yeah. I'm going to Google it while you're talking.
Anyway, so Bill lost his wife and not too long ago at this time when he met my nan.
A widower.
And they hit it off and started dating and moved in with each other and fell in love. And he was just a real sweet, sweet guy. And my nan is sweet, doesn't even begin to really describe it. She is a
darling.
Just a darling human. And it's really rough, to see. You know, we all knew he was passing, that he didn't have much time left, but man, oh man, it's just I just felt so bad for my nan, I just can't imagine losing two people that mean so much to you, sort of back to back, to go through that experience once is a lot, and then to just have to go through it again like that, and fuck, man. That's one of the things that when I think about getting old, the potential of not having to get old, that's one of the things where I go, well, thank God. Thank God I don't have to fucking deal with that shit, to see all your loved ones slowly fade away.
Yeah. It's going to happen in one way or another. It's funny you brought up you were missing Bigby, or you had a dream about Bigby the other night. Mm. I've been thinking about Bigby so much and feeling kind of emotional about it for the first time almost since we lost him. But funnily enough, I don't know if this has anything to do with it. Probably my sister came over. She's recording an album in Nova Scotia here, but she came over from PEI and she brought Bigby's ashes, which my mom has had.
Oh, right.
And so I have them. And after last week's conversation with Carrie Isham on sex ed for kids, I've been thinking about our nieces and nephews, and I've been thinking about what our responsibility is as like their aunts and uncles, mm-hmm. to not only them, but to their parents as well. Like, parents have a lot on their plate. They have a lot to like teach their kids about. And like, one of the big things that I think of with my nieces and nephews is like exposing them to like death,
yeah,
and grief, and letting them see those things as like ordinary and necessary parts of being, yeah, alive and being a human being and loving. So that's kind of why I tie that into it is, you know, when I think about things that like, I personally, so your mom had asked me if I would be sort of a caretaker of Bill, mm-hmm, with her, while he was passing, and I didn't get the opportunity because he passed much quicker than I thought. I was thinking about, you know, what kind of person, can do those things, like can show up in that way for loved ones, mm-hmm, because, you know, I did that with my dad. I would have done that in a heartbeat for my grandmother, if she needed that, but she just went so quickly. You know, and I think about that as a, you know, potential part of our future as well, mm-hmm, for you. And then of course my mom and all these people. And I know that that kind of work is not for everybody, but there is something to me that seems like a real natural fit for myself as a care, like I love to give care. Mm. And I wanted to, yeah, I just wanted to talk to you about it on the podcast because I was wondering, you know, given the conversation we had last week about, you know, educating kids and letting them have information and be informed. And then I asked you, I think yesterday or something, if you wanted to invite your nephews to take part in sort of spreading Bigby's ashes somewhere, mm, and introducing them to that.
When you said the boys in the text, you're like, we should include the boys. I was like,
Brian and Taylor?
Does she mean Brian and Taylor? Or does she mean the kids?
What did you think I meant?
I assumed you meant the kids, but I was like, she could also mean Brian and Taylor. So I don't really know. But anyway, yeah, I get it.
Yeah. And I wanted to bring that up because I don't know if there's something about death and sex that are both sort of those more difficult conversations that like are worthwhile being sort of the champions of in our familial.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they are the two things that we don't, you know, there's no talking about last week's episode with Carrie. There is no sexual education right now. Like that proper sexual education in this country, in the United States, like it doesn't exist unless you're receiving it from people like Carrie, which is a very minuscule fraction of the population.
Yeah.
So we don't have the conversations surrounding consent, sexuality, gender. Those things aren't happening. The exact same thing can be said for death. We just don't have those conversations. It's not a part of our, it's not a part of our upbringing. It's not a part of our, like, you know, everyday discussion. We just fall into the same trappings every generation, which develops this, like, you know, death phobia that's continued on for years and years and years. And you have people out there trying to change that, you know, people who are working in the death trade, people who are trying to normalize those types of conversations, whether they're, you know, working in the funeral business or palliative care or, you know, death doulas, like those kinds of folks are out there pushing for those conversations. But again, super small fraction of the population, and no one's really having the conversations because, you know, whatever, we just don't want to face it. Mm. Yeah.
I think that there's probably something about the way the models we have of grief. Like, I always think about Estelle when I think about, mm, like, who makes not who makes something out of grief, but who has like been to the bottom of their like heart.
Estelle,
and back again.
Estelle is a mutual friend of ours whose young, very young son passed away, and has made a lot of art surrounding that experience and has talked openly about that experience in the community and has made, you know, quite an impact on a lot of people's lives for the work that she's done. So yeah. Yeah.
And to bring it back to Bill and your nan, I was wondering what you think about the phrase old love came up in my mind, and old love is the name of a Norm Foster play as well. But old love, like, when you know, like your nan lost her husband of many, many, many years and then fell in love with someone else, got into a relationship with them. I wonder, I would love to ask her, maybe not like today, but ask her what kind of thoughts she had about getting into another relationship and in these sort of later, very later life, knowing he and then when he got sick, knowing he was going to be sick, you know, she took care of your pop for many years.
Yeah.
Just what I would love to mine her experience for allowing yourself to fall in love with someone you know is going to also, we are of the nature to get sick. We are of the nature to die.
Yeah, I'd be curious to know what she says. She's not a very talkative lady. No. So just, I mean, hearing her say anything would be quite fascinating. She's so fucking quiet.
Has she always been quiet her
always.
Whole life?
Oh, yeah, always.
She just
listens. She just likes to listen.
And even when she does talk, her mouth doesn't move very often. No. And you have to like get really
close to hear her. Fucking like Seal Cove, Newfoundland, rural Newfoundland accent. So you're like, if you're not familiar with that, you're just like, what did she say?
Yeah. I probably had like an exchange of 25 total words with her nan, but somehow we know that she's a deer. Maybe she's awful. Maybe she has a cold, cold
total
heart.
Witch. Yeah.
Well,
no, she's not. She's sweet. She's my nan. And she loves when I have a beard.
She loves when you have a beard.
She loves when my beard is long.
Really?
Yeah, she'll come up and she'll rub her face right into my beard.
She always tries to kiss me right on the mouth.
Oh, yeah. She loves those wet kisses.
Yeah. That's funny. My grandmother did not like beards. She would be like, she was blind as a bat, but she could tell.
That I had beards?
Yeah,
had
you. Beard. Like, when you she met Todd, she was like, well, maybe next time you come, you should shave. You shave for me.
That's funny.
She like a nice really smooth funny. Face.
Yeah.
love.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll have a conversation with Nan and see what that's all about.
She's gonna meet someone else that's fascinating. She's gonna be left with several men's inheritance or life insurance. Yeah, she's like, you know what? I might move to Florida, and then she goes
make
down
a racket
and,
of it.
Yeah. I hope so.
Do you got just the tips? Anything before we throw into 50 plus a tip?
Oh yeah. Do I have, okay, here's a, can I give you a challenge? Actually, yeah. I'm going to read you a little bit of science first. So today, this morning, the monthly email to Moto teachers came out from Moto Yoga International.
Okay.
And there's a section called Hot Tips for Teachers. And I read this in the yoga class that I taught this morning. And I think it's a really... I noticed, I'm going to tie it in with making eye contact with people. I noticed, well, as I was going for a walk yesterday evening, that it's always fascinated me that we walk by people and aren't fascinated that they exist. Like there was a day when if you pass someone that you didn't know, you'd be like, hi, where did you come from?
Yeah, right.
You know?
Yeah.
But we obviously don't do that anymore. And sometimes we just like don't even look at each other. We make eye contact and like I would love to invite everybody who's listening to notice what happens when they make eye contact, whether intentionally or unintentionally with someone that they're walking by on the street. Because I know personally, I may have a moment of like recoiling, especially if it's a person of the opposite sex and it's nighttime and I'm walking by myself, there's like, I don't want to invite any attention that I'm not looking for, but also I want to acknowledge there's a human being in front of me and we have masks on a lot of the time. Yeah. So I can't even just, you know, I'm just looking at someone and like smiling,
with crazy
smizing with my eyes. So my Just the Tips is more of a try this and see how it feels. So this Just the Tips for Teachers is hacking the nervous system with a smile. Hmm. And I'm just going to read a little part of it because I think the science is important. When you smile, your brain releases tiny molecules called neuropeptides. And this is a massive help in fighting off stress. Then other neurotransmitters like dopamine, serotonin, and endorphins come into play too. The endorphins act as a mild pain reliever, whereas the serotonin is an antidepressant. One study even suggests that smiling can help us recover faster from stress and reduce our heart rate. So that's it. That's all the science I'm going to read to you. But I would invite you over the next week until we meet again to maybe if it's comfortable enough for you to make eye contact with someone as you walk by them on the street, notice how it feels. And also then if there's space to offer a smile, I think that these are times that could use that, not only for yourself, but for everybody you pass by. Now, I'm not saying like go smile. You look better when you smile. But as long as this is not triggering for you to smile at strangers, I would offer that to you. Because I think it makes the world nicer.
I feel like that's one of the great things about having a new dog, a new puppy.
Ugh.
It's like you're just inviting that energy everywhere you go.
Yeah. What, like when you walk your puppy?
Yeah. Like a guy the other day, I was walking down to the condo and this guy was walking his dog. This like duck toller puppy. Oof. And I was just like, hi, can I say hi to him? And he was just like, yeah. And then I'm like talking to this dog and he's just smiling at me, smiling at the dog. And I'm looking up at him, smiling at him, going like, you own this thing. This, I love it. You know, it was just like this very, like, he got as much joy as I did to allow me to engage with his dog.
Yeah. Get a dog or smile at people, one or the other. What about you? You have Just the Tips?
Leah and I just started doing a thing together. This is actually really funny. Leah's been asking like, are there any like video games we can play together? And I was like, oh fuck. Like,
Worms.
Hell yeah. Yeah. Worms. Worms is actually a really great one. So I was looking for like video games that we could play together. And you know, like I have a PS5, and I'm trying to find games that are like newer just because I want to see what my system can do. And there's not like a lot out there. And I've looked at like the lists of like, here are great games to play like as couples. And like some of the games on there, like I've tried in the past. And it's like, it's like, these are like argument causing games. Like one's called Overcooked. And the whole idea is that you're two little people in your own sides of a kitchen and you're trying to like, it's like high stress, like try to get the orders out and wash the dishes all going on at one end. It's just like, it always ends in a sort of like a blowout.
It's too real.
It's too real. So it's like, yeah, no, you don't want any of that shit. And then I saw this review come out the other day. It was for a video game called It Takes Two. And I was like, oh, this looks cute. Like the thumbnail on YouTube looked really cutesy. And so I watched the review. And it's a review from like a video gaming website that basically like their job is to review games and they give it like a 9 out of 10, which is like kind of a big deal. Really high rating. And I was like, fuck, that game actually looks amazing. Not really sure what the game, like the story is about. Just that, you know, there's these gaming mechanics that are very fun and very easy. And, you know, you have unlimited lives. So like you can do this thing together. And you have to work together to make it work. And it's really cute and fun. So then I'm like, yeah, sweet. I think I found a game. So I was like, hey, Leah, I think I found a game for us. And she was like, cool, what is it? And I was like, here, I'll show you a trailer so you can just see it. So this is the first time I watched the trailer. And the game, like in the trailer, they reveal the story behind the game. And it's basically a couple that are a mom and a dad that are getting a divorce. And their child doesn't want them to get a divorce. And so the child cries and has these two little dolls that she made that are representing the mom and the dad. And she gets tears on the dolls. And it causes this spell reaction where it's kind of like Freaky Friday, where the parents' consciousness gets like embedded in the dolls.
Okay.
And now in order to get out of these dolls' bodies, they have to work together to like reverse the curse. And so the whole, and there's a game, there's a book, a character that's a book, and it's the book that the daughter has. And it's a book about making relationships work. And the book basically acts as like this sort of like therapist between the two.
Oh my gosh.
Pushing them to do these activities. So it's like Leah and I have been joking that it's like, oh, this is our couples therapy.
Yeah.
Our cheap couples therapy. And let me tell you, for real, it really is kind of like couples therapy. Like it is this, it's so fun. It is, you really do have to work together. And like, because you're intertwined in the story and the voice acting is amazing, the soundtrack's amazing, it looks really great. You kind of get like swept up into this world and I mean, like any good video game should, it sort of transports you. And so anyway, I just find like we're playing this game and then we come out and I'm like, oh, I feel like we made some good ground there. You know, like it is this like therapeutic bonding sort of experience. So like, and you know, Leah's not a gamer, yeah. You know, like Leah doesn't play video games, but she loves it. She's so into this game, constantly asking like if we can play. I love it because it's actually a very fun game and it's also really fun to play with a partner.
Cool.
So I'm sure there's somebody out there who's listening who loves video games as much as I do and wishes
could
that
use some free therapy.
Yeah, 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 and could use therapy, but also like wishes that they had a game that they could play with their partner. And anyway, this is one of those games that I think anybody should play because it's so fun and it's just so just so cute and so beautifully well done. It feels like you're playing a Pixar movie.
That's nice because yeah. A lot of games you're against each other. So it's nice to have a game where you have to work together.
Yeah. And little trivia here. The company that made this game, they made another what's called couch co-op, like co-op two player that you sit down and you can both play in the same room, couch co-op. They made another couch co-op game a few years back called A Way Out or The Way Out or something. And I haven't played it, but it looks great. It's basically two prisoners who are trying to work together to escape a prison, but it's like a little bit more serious probably like a little more R-rated. Whereas like this game, It Takes Two is definitely like more kid friendly. Although they do have like, they've got some potty mouths on them, those two parents.
Can it be like two moms? Two dads?
No, the story is a mom and a dad.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a pretty like linear fixed story. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Anyway.
Sounds neat.
It Takes Two. Highly recommend it. And I think it's like on all platforms. So there you go. This is fucking sounding like an ad for It Takes Two.
It Takes Two, baby.
Speaking of just the tips, this is a conversation that we had with Danny and Riley from the 50 Plus a Tip podcast. A podcast for
and by sex workers.
Yep. I was trying to remember the tagline, which is like a podcast for a podcast for hoes and hoe minds or something like that. But it was a great, tagline. They were a riot to sit and talk with. Danny is a sex worker from out west. Riley also in the same boat, and they're two good friends. Technically, it's Danny's podcast, but I feel like Riley has kind of like inserted herself into becoming a co-host, even though that might technically not be the truth. It's probably going to end up that
Yeah.
In a few months, we look at their Instagram and see that it's both their podcasts.
But they have a good, they have a good dynamic.
They got a good thing going. And we had a lot of fun talking to them, and think that you will enjoy this, and hopefully you do as much as we did. And I think, yeah, we'll leave it at that. And we'll see you all on the other side.
Boom. I listened to a recent podcast episode where you said you were going to be talking to us. I'm glad I picked that one. Like, oh, this is relatable.
And the podcast you were referring to, Bridie, is 50 Plus a Tip podcast. Ladies, why don't you just do our work for us and and give our listeners a little intro. What is 50 Plus a Tip all about?
Yeah, so I started the podcast because I really wanted to create a safe space for sex workers to have a voice. I was really sick of hearing all the negative stigma and the complete like false representation on media and movies and TV. And me and my girlfriend sitting there being like, that's not true. That's not us. And mostly just representation of like on street sex work. And I was guest lecturing at local universities, and a lot of the kids or students had really great questions. And I was like, if they have great questions, I bet a lot of people have great questions and a lot of people want to hear these answers. So I started the podcast really wanting to give sex workers a voice and have a safe space for them. As it's progressed, I've kind of just opened up to just sexuality in general. So we've had transgender fathers coming on with their children and talking about that, that experience. We've had drag superstars. We've had women, you know, 30 years into a marriage exploring their sexuality and maybe wanting to explore outside their marriage and how that looks. So yeah, it's kind of just a safe space now for people that are in quotes outside the norm to talk about their sexuality.
First of all, I just want to make a comment about how much I love the tagline for the podcast, a podcast for strippers and other open-minded hoes. That's so perfect. Danny, I hear all that, and this sounds like a great space for people to come on and talk about any and all of these issues. But what makes you the person to start this podcast? Are you like you say you were lecturing at local universities? What's your background and what do you do for a living outside of podcasting? What do you do for a living?
I know nothing about nothing. I have 7 years experience in sex work, primarily or predominantly exotic dancing and escorting. I graduated with distinction with a psychology degree and paralegal. I guest lecture at local universities on the topic, and I host the podcast at 50 Plus a Tip and Sex Worker Book Club and host lap dance workshops. So pretty much all of my life has to do with the sex and sex work.
Lap dance workshops? That sounds fucking fun.
Yeah, they're a good time.
I'm really curious about the university lecture portion of this. Like, in terms of like sex work visibility or sex workers, like visibility and being able to just be like, this is a legitimate career. This is my job. This is what I do. This is like, you know, it's literally been around forever. What is going in, like when you're going into universities now and you're giving these lectures, I'm assuming it's not like career day, but it's more of like obviously some type of education about the industry.
Yeah. So I took the course back when I was doing one of my degrees several years ago, and it was a sex work legality in Canada class. It was a fourth year an upper level criminology course. And one of the first days I spoke to the professor, I said, you know, if I challenge you on things you're saying, it's because, you know, I'm in the industry. I'm not trying to be just like the asshole in the front of the row. So me and her had a lot of good after class talks about things. And then when she continued teaching the course at different universities, she asked if I'd come on and give kind of like a face to what my avenues of sex work look like, and which I think is super important because to be representative of, you know, someone who holds degrees, who has more behind them than just sex work and making yourself more of a four-dimensional kind of image for them is important, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine what that would have been like for me at any point in the last like 10, 15 years, if someone had in a very like approachable and relatable kind of way was like, hey, this is out there. It's not all it's interesting that it's tucked in like the criminology section of the education, but like just as literally as work or as legitimate work, here is maybe things, this is what it looks like, this is what it can look like, these are options. If I had seen any sign of that in my growing up, I think like I've talked to Jeremy about this so many times. I think at 18, I was like, I think I would really like to try stripping. And I went to like my first audition, right. And I was like, yeah, I was just like way too scared. I was in London, England. It was a city I didn't know. And I was totally overwhelmed by it. But if there had been more openings like towards me in that direction, I feel like I would have really enjoyed digging into that industry a little bit. I've always sort of been fascinated by it. So thank you for doing that. So that's primarily in Vancouver, I guess, where you're at.
Yeah, exactly. Vancouver here.
So what can you tell us then about the sex work industry and legalities in Canada?
Yeah. So pretty much in the short, it's bullshit. We have a really messed up legal system in a lot of different ways, but especially with regards to sex workers and our very obvious lack of rights. We have a Nordic model here where we allegedly prosecute the buyers not the sellers, which is not really actually the case, but that's how they present it as, in a way to kind of go around saying, well, we give you guys your rights to sell sex, but we're going to go in a gray area and say, well, we'll prosecute anyone who buys from you.
What do you mean by Nordic model? What is that? Is that based off of like that's how it happens in Nordic countries? Like they allow the sex worker to do the transaction, but they also prosecute the buyer. Is that?
Yeah, it's predominantly in those areas, and they just call it the Nordic model here, and it's what we kind of followed. But yeah, pretty much it's just a gray area. There is a case called the Bedford case. Tracy Bedford was a sex worker, and she came up, this was several years back, and said, you know, this violates our fundamental rights of selling our bodies and doing what we want with it. So they came up with Bill C-36, which was a way to say, okay, we heard you, so be quiet. And then here's all the bullshit ways we'll kind of still keep exactly what we want to do with it, but pretend like we're letting you have a say in what you do. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's a lot of fixing that needs to go on in our legal system. And I'm sure we'll get into it later, but one of the reasons why sex work can be dangerous is predominantly because of the way our laws are.
Yeah, right. Turn Me On Podcast. We'll be back after this short break.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Are we, you know, I know that with COVID sort of shaking the foundation of the entire planet, it seems that, you know, for better or for worse, the pandemic has also started to shift the landscape when it comes to a lot of laws and the ways that we look at sort of, you know, income and the ways that people live their lives day to day. Like, are we in any kind of place where we're headed in the right direction when it comes to legalities surrounding sex work, or are we pretty much like at a stalemate here in Canada?
I mean, it's great to be optimistic. Yeah, it's a lovely thing. Right. There is different acts coming out, like the PCEPA, Protected Persons Act, and we have a new anti-porn. It's supposed to be, and I need to learn more about it. It's more of a new thing coming up. But the idea is that it's protecting younger people from seeing porn. All these ways are really, they sound nice to the general public, but they're super harmful to the industry still. Mm. And you're correct in saying that COVID did change the landscape quite a bit. We saw a lot of sex workers moving online, mm-hmm. but with that came Zuckerberg and everyone else creating all these insane online laws now, right? So it seems like every time sex workers try to pivot and adapt, there's someone there kind of like roadblocking that and being like, nope. Nice to try to have progress, but we're going to stop you right there.
Right.
So it's been very frustrating for the community who's especially tried to go online.
Right. Danny, how did you get into sex work? Like what's your origin story?
Right. Which is funny because I came from a very small religious community, as you know, that's always the case. Like the
classic. Yeah.
Right. Catholic school girl. Yeah. No, I went to Mennonite school, even worse. And this is back when, not to date myself too much, but this is back when the oil rigs were doing really well in Fort Mac. Mm. Those are like the glory days of Fort Mac. And my partner at the time wanted to go work on the rigs because that was where the money was. And his cousin was the bar manager at the strip club out there. So I started serving when we moved out there, and the money was ridiculously good. But I found the servers were quite catty, and I got on really well with the dancers. So I'd have, you know, dinner and lunch with the dancers, and we get on really well. And I was like, I want to be more with these girls and less with the catty girls. And then I had grown up professionally or competitively dancing, which I always joke my parents set me up for, you know, a year in life and sex work. And they're always like, hilarious. You know, our hard-earned money. Great. So then my bar manager, he kind of managed the whole club, was like, do you want to try stripping? And I was like, well, the skirts I'm wearing already to serve in, it's pretty much like my vulva's out. So why not? And yeah, I liked it from the get-go. It was a great place to start, Fort Mac. And then I moved back eventually to Vancouver, thought I would start serving again because my next partner wasn't as comfortable, mm-hmm. Which is a trend you'll see in most relationships. And I couldn't do it. I was like, I'm making like 1/10 the money, and people are so much more rude to servers than they are to strippers. So fuck this. I'm going back to stripping and making more money and having more autonomy and feeling more respected. So I went right back, and yeah, I've been doing it since.
That's wild. I love that story.
That's one thing I always kind of have always kind of wondered about, you know, like whether it be people who work in the porn industry or people who work in this, you know, work in sex work in any sort of facet. I always wonder about the dating dynamics and how that kind of plays a role in that work life, because obviously it's, you know, obviously it can work for some people. But then just as obviously it also seems like it could be pretty problematic for a lot of relationships. What has your experience been with, yeah, like especially, I don't know. Maybe I'm painting too broad of a brush, but I feel like there's probably a lot of people who would go, I can handle the idea of dating a stripper, But then you toss in like, okay, well, how do you feel about dating an escort? And like the numbers would probably fall off quite a bit of like, I don't know if I could handle dating an escort. Like that's where like people would probably throw their hands up. What has been your experience in terms of dating life as a sex worker? Like does it make it harder or do you just kind of like put that out there and it attracts the people that are inherently just going to accept you for, you know, whatever the fuck it is that you're doing for a living.
Right. Well, two important things there. One, I'm sure you guys have touched on this before, a sex worker is an umbrella term, right? For all avenues of the sex work industry. And then with escorting and prostitution being two vastly different things, even though people like to muddle them together, escorting being paid time. So lunches, dinners, dates, prostitution meaning, actual paid sex, right? So while you can do both, someone who just escorts like myself is just paid time. Unfortunately, because of that very muddled view of the two, when I tell a gentleman caller, or, you know, someone to go on a date with or a woman that I'm an escort, they go, oh, she fucks for money. Not the case. That's not what it is. But then you try explaining to them, and if they're usually a square, they'll be like, oh, okay, sure. They don't really, the concept of being paid to go for a dinner date is so far from people's mind. Long story short, it's really shitty. If you've been to Vancouver, dating here just sucks in general, but especially adding on the idea of anyone who's remotely insecure or has trust issues to be like, okay, well, that's great. But also I spend most of my time and how I get my money is being adored or wanted by other people. It's really hard to explain to someone who's not in the industry how much we compartmentalize our work and that it really is a job to us. You know, I'm Danica from these hours and then I'm me and in my free time. And that when you're with a client, no matter how wonderful they are or attractive or X, Y, and Z, there's still a level of professionalism in your mind, that it really is a job. But Riley has probably a better current story to tell you because she is successfully in a relationship with a very lovely gentleman. We had him on the podcast a couple weeks back, so I'll let Riley take it from here.
That's great. I was like, we got to get over there because Riley's now sitting there and I want Riley's origin story as well.
I'm just sitting here like nodding along like yeah. I did it. I am in a relationship that was a success, but we kind of do have this thing in the industry where everyone wants to fuck a stripper. No one wants to date a stripper. Sorry, are we allowed to swear on the podcast?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely not.
I hope we fucking are.
So, you know, especially if you meet a guy at the strip club or a girl at the strip club, it's all fun and games until a couple weeks down the track, they don't understand why you're still stripping. Like you were just going to quit the job as soon as someone like a Captain Save-A-Ho kind of saved you from this terrible career. And then it's typically the first thing that comes up in a fight. Like you get into a fight and then suddenly it's, you're a fucking whore anyway. Like, you do it like I have always been pretty open about what I do, and you do tend to attract people who are comfortable with it, and the people that aren't comfortable with it exit your life pretty quickly.
Is it one of those things where like, and Danny, you kind of alluded to this, but like does it sort of force you, not force you, but does it sort of nudge you in the direction more so of kind of dating people who are in some way or another, you know, within the industry or like adjacent to the industry?
I don't typically.
Yeah, both of you answer the exact same time. let's do that.
I've typically dated people that don't live a square lifestyle. You know, they don't work a 9-to-5, which is probably the easiest I find because if they work a 9-to-5 and then you're going to the club, you know, 5-to-3, like you don't have much of any time to spend together, which wears on a relationship for sure. I had a partner before who would join me with certain sex work opportunities. And that was good. It kind of helped him understand how much it is possible to compartmentalize the two. But me and Riley have very different types of men and women. Mm-hmm. So that works well. Riley's are probably much nicer to date.
Yeah, my current partner is probably the most vanilla person I've met in my entire life, but he is very supportive and very accepting of what I do. And ultimately, yeah, that kind of is what you're going for. So, yeah.
Is he an accountant by chance?
Better.
Isn't an accountant. He's actually a brewer.
Oh, fuck yeah. All right, sweet.
Yeah.
Well, he's got his thing then. He's got his focus. But okay, so I have a question about stigma. Because I am curious about how it sort of shows up within personal relationships as well as in the greater like public. Because I've found over the last couple of years my own sort of observation of my relationships, like one of the big questions in my mind is like, where does like, how am I being affected by the patriarchy? Like, what does that look like societally and systemically? But also, what does that look like in my own house, in like in my own home? And where do those dynamics as they play out within my personal relationship or even in my relationships with other family members? So I was wondering if you could speak to like that, sort of the types of stigma. Like you're like, well, whatever, you're a whore anyway. I can totally see that, like, just it's so like the low hanging fruit is just like something to throw. But what other ways I guess do stigma sort of rear its head within relationships and then also like in the greater picture of our culture?
I think with relationships, like that's the biggest one. I think I'm obviously like a very outspoken person and I really do care to be an advocate for sex workers' rights and proper representation. Again, important to note that we talk from a very privileged place, excuse me, of, you know, off street sex workers. And, you know, I'm white passing, Riley identifies as a white person. So, you know, we come from a privileged place and that's important to note that our experiences can be vastly different from others. But for myself, I want to be properly represented. And so anyone who's like dated me, like they're going to get the rundown pretty early on. But like Riley said, from like our argument place, yeah, that you're a whore or you're unlovable, that will come up a lot. They'll be like, no one's going to date you. Like, look at you. You're a stripper. You're an escort. No one's going to date you after me. So that kind of gets thrown around a lot. I found in the larger scheme of things, you know, the typical drug and alcohol abuse, like you guys must have a dependency problem on something. Which, I mean, I rarely ever drink, don't do any drugs. Riley is not a big drinker either. Side beer every once in a while. So, and I think part of that might be subconsciously me trying so hard to be the opposite of what people are going to try to paint you as. And because even if you do have one drunk night, you're that drunk stripper, you know, you're that drunk mess, which is unfortunate. So I'm not a big drinker at all. And that you have a bad family or no family. That's another thing people say a lot. And, you know, I see my family every Sunday, Monday night, I go spend card night with them. And Riley's very close to her family as well. So that's just another stigma we get a lot. Unlovable thing comes up a lot. But then I always like to throw out that Lisa Sparks, I don't know if you're familiar with her. She's a porn actress. She held the record for most amount of men she slept with in 24 hours. I think she did 12 hours and it was 919, I think. And she's been happily married for like 20 plus years. So I'm always like, well, if Lisa Sparks can do it, can do it. And then, yeah, that we're all victims too is another one that gets tossed around a lot, that we didn't choose this. It's a last resort. And people say the running joke that sex worker stripping is this like metric for failure in our society. You know, if I fail this class, I'm going to be a stripper. If I get kicked out of this job or, get fired, I'm going to be a stripper, as if it's like a last resort thing. So I think that could be very frustrating for a lot of us that like, no, we get to flourish in this job and we get to use a lot of great skills and we get to have a lot of autonomy, great money, great schedule, meet great people.
Yeah.
Gets overshadowed a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's one of the things that I've, you know, one of the many things that I've taken from doing this podcast is since we began, whatever, 4 or 5 years ago, my growing list of friends that are in that work as sex workers in some form or fashion, like the one thing that the sentiment that I hear from all of them is just how empowering that work is and can be. And that's one of those things where, you know, not to like throw my dad under the bus, but like if I think about my dad and the way he probably thinks about sex workers, it's like he probably doesn't think about it that way. You know, he probably doesn't look at it from that perspective. And I feel like there's like a pretty large portion of the population who probably also don't really stop and consider it to be a form of work that could be really empowering and really like beautiful and flourishing, like you said. It's really like super unfortunate. Like are there any places in the world that you know of that culturally view sex work in a very different light and you know legally view sex work in a different light for the better?
Yeah, well, a comment on what you just said there. I agree with you that sex work can be very empowering, but I think it's also something to note that sex work is one of the only jobs I know for people like have this demand for it to be empowering to justify it. You know, it's like, that's one of the first things people ask you is like, well, are you empowered? It's like, you're not going to ask your coffee barista if she's empowered by, you know, making that latte. Like we don't have this like demand on other jobs, you know, and just like anything. Yeah. It can be great and it can be empowering. And I'm happy to hear that a lot of your sex worker friends have said that and voiced that, because that's great that they're empowered. But it can also be really shitty sometimes. You know, there's days where you're like, damn, I don't want to be at work today. Or like that client was an asshole.
Yeah. Work is work. Yeah.
100%. But I do think that it is out of the vast amount of work opportunities, I do think sex work is at the top of the list or one of them, of the most empowering, besides, you know, maybe like curing kids' cancer, you know, like I'll give that one. They can have the top. But no, I think like I'm not very traveled. I'll admit that. I've been in school for too long and I've been like stuck where I am. But I always hear Europe is much more understanding of nudity and the that could be a total lie and just what I see in movies. But Riley, what do you think? I'll let you speak every once in a while.
I'm here. New Zealand, I'm pretty sure sex work, including prostitution, is legal in New Zealand. Like you don't have any or is at least decriminalized. But I there's definitely still that stigma. It's always like that, the hooker on kind of K Road, we call it. It's like the bad place of town that you go to find prostitutes and stuff. It's very like on street sex work is kind of the idea that people go to when they talk about sex work, as opposed to like, you know, as Danica said, we work from a place of privilege in that we can always turn down a client, or, you know, we don't need to do anything that we're uncomfortable with to pay rent. So yeah, there's definitely still a lot of stigma to it, even though it's legally not a problem.
We didn't really get into it, but Riley, what's your origin story, and like what capacity do you work in the industry yourself?
I'm in school at the moment, but apart from that, like I've made sex work my full-time job for the past 2 years. I originally started doing topless poker dealing as kind of a side hustle to working at a brewery and being in school. And it just kind of, I met some really great women through it who then introduced me to a strip club that I started working at. And then slowly I became more confident in it, and I just dropped my other jobs because, you know, you get to choose your own hours. The money's really good. I'm managing to be in school and still paying my bills on like sometimes one day a week of work. I mean, the pre-COVID, of course. But I just sort of fell into it via the people that I knew.
Where does topless poker take place?
Everywhere.
In your own backyard.
I love that.
Wherever you want.
Exactly. It was like, we would just get an email asking who was available for a time and a place, and you would just kind of apply, which is why I ended up working in the club, is the topless poker dealing wasn't consistent enough to make it my full-time job. But yeah, working this industry, you start to walk around streets and you're like, oh, there's definitely like a strip lounge in there that no one talks about. This place definitely has parties. Like,
oh, okay. So I am actually quite fascinated about this, because I didn't realize this was a thing. How did you know that was a job? Like, how do you go? I'm gonna deal tonight, but with my top off. Like
I would just safely assume that anything a woman's doing, she's gonna make more money topless. So you get topless bartending, topless poker dealing. There's 100%. You know, topless housemaids.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Was it an equivalent to like a Craigslist ad, or like how did you find that work?
So a girlfriend of mine recommended this sort of work to me. Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. But I have actually seen the ads on Craigslist. Yeah, so, okay. Right. Maybe have a look, you know?
Right. Okay.
Jeremy, maybe you should get a few gigs.
I make a killing topless, you know, dealing, I'm sure.
There's so much more. I think this is to be true, but there's so much more, representation of sex work in the media, in entertainment media, like film and television these days. And I'm wondering, you know, you've seen it, I'm sure. I'm wondering what your thoughts are, like who's doing a really good job, or where is it really out to left field? Like, what do you think would make a really an accurate represented character in a show that was a sex worker without it having to be like, this is about this person who's a sex worker, you know, but it's just something additionally. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Why not? Few do a good representation of it. A lot of them are either in comedies as like, oh, you fucked the stripper, or oh my God, dead hooker joke, things like that. Unfortunately, it blows my mind when I see it in 2021 still like coming up like that. Like this joke is still a thing. So that, or it's a way to like progress the storyline. And they're always like drinking, or they're always a single mother, or they're always like needing some guy to save them. Or the Hustlers movie, which I know is loosely based on true events, but it just like, me and Riley and a few of our friends out there, and just like one of the, yes, that does happen, right? Like the Hustler movie was based on true events of women taking advantage of drunk men, which is funny because you'll never hear like, oh, he shouldn't have been drinking then, which I find interesting. We don't victim blame when a guy gets robbed by a hooker. But that's, you know, a whole other podcast. I can argue about that. But the danger of always presenting them like that is you're kind of dehumanizing them and you're making it okay to harm them, right? It's like, oh, well, she robs people and she drugs men. Like, so, you know, who cares if we beat her up, or who cares if we kill her? Can be super harmful. And then our laws come into play to make it worse. I know P-Valley, a lot of people talk about P-Valley. Me and Riley are not well-versed on it. So that's one of our goals, is to watch P-Valley and report back on its representation. But I've heard kind of mixed reviews on how it does represent certain types of clubs. I remember, I think it's like not CSI, but it's one of those like crime scene shows where it's like the special units, and there's like a clip and it goes around like the sex work community every once in a while. And the girl who was attacked was a stripper, and she's talking to the investigator, and she's like, you know, I don't, you know, he won't be prosecuted. Like, I'm a stripper. And the gentleman who's investigating is like, it doesn't matter what you do, you're still human. And like that, it's so rare that that's like the only one I could think of that constantly gets circulated as like, whoa, like they said something right about strippers for once.
Also funny that it's one of those shows, you know, cause like that's the show that you anticipated to be the bullshit.
Yeah.
So interesting. Yeah. That's really interesting.
Yeah. Riley, what about you?
I mean, yeah, I echo a lot of what you said, including the Hustlers movie. Like if we're not the victims of a movie, we're still the villains in some capacity. You know, we're scammers, we're liars, we drug men, anything like that. But, you know, stripping is such a strange job because everyone thinks that it's really exciting all the time. And if there was a movie about actual strippers, it would be really boring. Everyone would be sitting in the dressing room for like 85% of the movie.
Yeah.
And then
eating
like
fries, bitching about the guys.
Exactly. Complaining about people, like complaining there's not enough money going around. Like it would be very boring. And I think it's a really easy job to like blow up to be like exciting. Like you never hear like an exciting movie about like an accountant, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want the change room scene where she's like bending over being like, can you see my tampon string? Oh, my boyfriend. You know, like I want the real locker room talk.
Yeah.
Who I have to ask this, from like perpetuating all of the stigma for allowing that representation to remain sort of in that sort of that tone, who benefits from that? Who benefits from like keeping sex work like a dangerous job?
I think a lot of people do, to be honest. I think it gives a scapegoat to certain people to say, you know, I might be a slut, but at least I don't get paid for it like her. Or, you know, I might have slept with this many, but at least I'm not a hooker. Or even internal stigmatization, you see it a lot too. I think it helps the Johns out that come to sex workers. I think it helps men in general because they get to demand that sex be free and that they never have to pay for it. Yeah, I think it benefits a lot of people's like internal horror phobia. You know, that is so prevalent and alive and well, unfortunately. Riley, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. I think it gives the media a scapegoat as well. Like, I work at a club in Vancouver, and, you know, to circle back to the stigma of sex workers that we're all dirty and that we're diseased or whatever you want to call it. Which is absolutely not the case. Like for the women that I know who are in full service sex work or prostitution, they're getting regularly tested. Probably, you know, they have a standing order for every 6 weeks, and they're getting their throat swabbed for STIs as well. It's like, when's the last time that Brad at the bar got an STI check? Like, it's our job to protect our body and be healthy. But you know, when COVID came out or even made its debut, there was a lot of talk from Bonnie Henry about how we need to be really careful about how we talk about people who have had COVID outbreaks or businesses that have had COVID outbreaks. And then lo and behold, like a week later in the media, it was, COVID outbreak at local strip club, address, pictures, like everything. And it was just, and then of course that led to a bunch of comments being like, well, they are diseased anyway. No one at this club had tested positive. Like I tried to go get tested. They wouldn't even test me because I wasn't working on that night. All of my friends who got tested, everything came back negative. It was a couple of people who flew in from Toronto, didn't quarantine and went straight to the strip club. And that's the only place that was named. And it was really unfortunate that they just put all that stigma on us so that when you talk about future places, it's not so big. But I don't know anyone who would go straight from an airport to a hotel to a strip club. Like there's usually a bar or a dinner or an Uber. Like there's something else, and nothing was named. And it was such a shame how the media kind of handled that.
Is that laziness? Or
No, I don't think it's laziness. I think it's sensationalism. It's like, it's clickbait. You know,
I also think.
No, go ahead, Danny.
Sorry. I think it's also just, it works in their political agenda, right? Because then they have enough of that backing and they go, see, this is why sex work should be criminalized. Because look, remember that COVID outbreak that happened at that dirty strip club where the guy, you know, didn't even go to a hotel. He just stayed there all week. I think it's very it really feeds into their kind of end goal of painting this certain kind of image. Which we're seeing now, unfortunately, with the terrible Atlanta shootings. There's very little mention. There's a lot of mention about their race and how it was a racial attack, but very little comment on on it being a sex worker. Because, and this is in our sex work community, we talked about it a bit. And one of our theories is because it's, you know, and it should be, but it's like the right thing to get behind racially targeted crimes, like that you should get behind that. Mm-hmm. But the media doesn't want to get behind sex worker targeted crimes because that's not cool. So now they're kind of like, oh, we won't mention that part. Mm-hmm. So I know that the sex work community has been talking about that a lot, how as much as yes, we should talk about anti-Asian crimes, and that's unfortunately very prevalent right now and something we should really be addressing. There's a second aspect of that situation that is completely being ignored by the media. I think it's on the same train of thought.
Did you see that LA Times piece by Tracy Kwan? And it said, don't forget the Georgia shootings are a hate crime against sex workers. And I think she herself is a sex worker. She's an Asian sex worker, I believe. When I was reading that, I was like, okay, this is really interesting perspective on exactly what you're saying. Just we can't ignore the fact. We can't just pick the parts here, that there's a lot. There's a lot more going on than the people want to be talking about.
Definitely, it's a really. It's unfortunate though that you'll often see the only times that sex workers' rights or anything like that or comments or articles she's made, it's usually a sex worker doing it. It's it's often, right. Oftentimes you see a square fighting for sex workers representation or sex workers conversation or that's something else to note.
Yeah. Well then on that note, what do you think in terms of in the wake of that tragedy and other acts of violence that are happening in and around on the same theme, both race and on sex workers, what do you think the squares, who hear this and are I'm maybe not directly affected because I'm not a social worker and I'm not racialized, but what do you think for us, for the squares, our role, are the most help that we can be, whether it's I'm going to spread the word about this LA Times article that's written by someone whose voice should be heard in this conversation. And, people who don't have a podcast as well, what do we do to help our friends in the sex industry be safer when they're going to work?
I was going to let Riley go for once.
I was just going with the pattern. I mean, the thing that would help us absolutely the most is decriminalization of sex work. And proper representation of sex work would be the two ultimate things. And I think that's, I jumped onto Danica's podcast, sort of never left. And there's been a real pride in breaking down what people thought a sex worker was. Mm. Both me and Danica have education. She's finished her degrees. I'm currently taking statistics, which is not your typical degree. And there's some real pride behind not being that typical stripper. And you get that all the time in the club I wouldn't have expected you to be a stripper. What are you doing in the sex work industry? I think people being more open about it and open about their engagement with sex work as well would definitely help. But ultimately, decriminalization is where it's at.
Mm. I definitely agree with you. And also going forward with decriminalization, potentially unionizing, having labor laws. That's one of the reasons why I personally choose to use sex work as an umbrella term, because it acknowledges the work aspect of sex work. Mm. So having proper labor laws are huge, because, you know, me and Riley have both witnessed it, you know, girls being kicked out of the club or fired for no reason other than the manager just didn't like them, or another girl didn't like them and she had more pull with the managers. And me and Riley have talked about this before. There is like a level of anxiety you live with when you don't have workers' rights or labor laws that protect you from potentially losing your job suddenly, randomly one day. So that's a huge thing too, that I know a lot of us fight for and wish for, having that.
Danny and Riley, 50 Plus a Tip podcast. How can people find what you guys are up to? Follow along. Give our listeners a little shameless plug.
So 50 Plus a Tip on Instagram. So that's like 50 Plus a Tip, or you can email me at 50plusatip@gmail.com. I just use that Instagram now, so.
You can find me through Danica or at my own Instagram, Van City Riley. I pop up on the podcast. She doesn't like to admit it, but I'm like a part-time co-host.
She's so regularly now. I can't get rid of her.
You can complain about it, but every week.
I'm like, when are you coming over to support?
Message. When are we recording?
Also, thank you for that comment, because now we're probably gonna get a message from some square being like, Danica's Riley's pimp. Didn't you hear? You can book Riley through Danica.
Oh fuck. Great. This has been really fun, you guys. Thanks for taking time out of your day to sit down and chat with us. And we hope
thank you so much for having us.
Start tuning in. Yeah, thanks a lot.
Yes, thank you.
All right. All right, there we go. That was our conversation with Danny and Riley from 50 Plus a Tip.
Well, it definitely inspires me to look up a little more about. I'm very curious about the future of sex work. I'm wondering if we'll ever, you know, bring it around to the century we're in, where it's a viable, you know, something that always stood out to me was anybody who says, you know, that the thing about, if you think that like exchanging your body for money is different for sex work versus most of our jobs that we do sell our bodies, or like what our bodies can do. Yeah. Our bodies are breaking down at work all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, they're, you know, anyway, that always comes up. If I want to know whether we'll ever be able to look at sex work as,
I wonder if religion never existed, if sex work would never have been bastardized,
right,
or like vilified.
When I looked at Bill 36 to see what the, like what it says, it does insinuate, it says that it wants to reduce the demand for sex work. I'm like, how are you going to do that? Because it seems like it definitely, it's a role that needs to exist.
Yeah. I saw, again, like a headline warrior, I don't read fucking anything, but I saw a headline the other day that said that countries where religion is like prevalent within the culture tend to have a higher wage gap between, like the male to female wage gap is a lot higher.
Really?
And it made me just kind of sit and think, like, I wonder what are all the ways that religion has had an effect on culture? I mean, it's so many fucking ways, but like, what are the ways that it's had an effect on culture that we might not have like really thought about or realized, or that you might not typically think about or realize? But
a lot. Yeah, for sure.
And that's I'm not here shitting on religion. I mean, and I'm not shitting on religion either. So I'll just leave that at that.
The thing that Carrie Isham said last week about the personal shame being behind a lot of legislation,
like,
and people and legislators, really kind of blew my mind when I thought about it. Yeah. Especially, you know, talking about trauma and sexual trauma, and the more and more and more and more we talk about it, the more and more we realize how most people have experienced either some kind of trauma or some kind of sexual trauma. And it's just like, we're all walking around fucking traumatized, trying to make up rules to protect each other from, you know, it's just a little misguided. And I think Carrie was right in terms of we got to heal, really like heal this stuff. And I know religion plays a lot of part in shame.
Oh yeah.
So,
yep.
So there's that.
A lot of shit comes with religion. Yeah. All right. Well, that's another podcast for another
day.
That's
our next podcast.
Yeah. Oh, God. No.
Other conversations that people don't want to have.
That is it for this week. Thank you, guys. Thank you all. Thank you, gang. Thank you, folks, for tuning in. We appreciate all of you, especially our patrons. We appreciate you more than anyone else. Everyone else takes a back seat compared to you. You sit up in the front with us. And if you want to support the podcast, help this project to keep chugging along. We're an independent podcast. It's just the two of us. With a handful of people that have really supported over the years, but
that consistent all in all, Patreon monthly subscription
is really important for us to keep things going. So thank you all for your support. And if you want to support, patreon.com/termion. And if you want to reach out to us, you can do that by
email termionpodcast@gmail.com. You can also DM us on Instagram @termionpodcast. We sometimes check it, but mostly email. You can reach out to us for any reason. If you want to be on the show, if you think someone should be on the show, if you have any thoughts, you just want to say hi, we like it. That's pretty much it for our social media, I think.
Yeah, I think so. That is it for this week. Until next week.
Go lovingly touch yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.